was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor, while the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night folds in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders, but don't believe the lie. Even in this wealthy nation, it could come down to starvation in the twinkling of an eye.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Media Reloaded. I am your host, Lori Anderson. I am joined with Chris this evening, and we are going to be connecting some dots with Mastering the Human Domain once again. And it pulls out of not only what Ammon Bundy said, the situation with the Hammonds, the situation with the Bundys, and I'm going to try to connect some dots to what is even currently going on to show how Mastering the Human Domain is being utilized. Now, whether it's being utilized by our military or not, or maybe it's being utilized by those quote-unquote secret government, the ones who are trying to fight back in a corrupt manner and set people up, the deep state, whatever you want to call them. More and more when you research, it does appear that they are using Mastering the Human Domain. So why is it important to know about? Because once you understand Mastering the Human Domain and what it is about, the seventh warfighting function, then you will understand how to see it. You will understand how to pick it out very quickly, including on fake news media sites or just in general in real life. But I think it is very important to connect those dots. Chris, I want to thank you so much for joining me in the second hour. How are you doing?
Well, it's my pleasure to join you, Miss Lori, as always, and anybody on the Republic Radio Channel, especially on the Resurrect Republic Truth Channel that we're on right now on Tom's show. It's just it's an ultra pleasure to be with true journalists, true investigative journalists that actually do their research, to watch their back and check their facts, as you say.
And we absolutely
do our research.
Oh, absolutely. And you are going to absolutely love what I have found. So one of the things that I want to get to, and I'm not going to cover much of this because this is all over the net. Most of the people now know about the FISA memo that everybody's hollering about, release the memo, release the memo, release the memo. But the reason I'm saying this actually connects to Mastering the Human Domain, the seventh warfighting function, and I'll tell you why in a moment. So,
well, I think
a lot of people, go ahead.
I was going to say it's worthy of recalling because this was talked about, well, it had to be a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was
mm-hmm.
the motto of Jade Helm.
Yes, it was.
And
Jade Helm 15.
And that was Mastering the Home Human Domain. Or who?
That's
who
exactly
domain.
Right. Yes, exactly. And that is actually what got me beginning to search and learn about mastering the human domain was because of Jade Helm 15. And so I dug a lot deeper than most individuals did, and I found that the physical exercises were nowhere near as dangerous as the actual mastering the human domain itself. That's where the real danger lies, and that's why we need to keep reporting on it until the listeners understand it, as well as new listeners to be informed that may not have ever heard of that terminology. But first I want to go to the FISA memo that everybody's saying, release the memo, release the memo. And they're speaking about a 4-page memo. So the perception is, oh, the memo cannot be released unless Congress votes on it. That's not really accurate. Okay, the memo is a memo that was actually written by Trey Gowdy. He admitted that. All they have to do is actually read it on the House floor. So I'm going to play for you a short clip of Judge Andrew Napolitano. I want you to hear it from his mouth first, and then I'm going to connect some more dots, and then we're going to go into some serious documents, which of course will be left in the description box below the show for you to be able to access yourself, for you to study, for you to, so that you can research and learn. If you would, Mike, go ahead and play that clip.
Intelligence Committee votes to release it, and it seems as though there will soon be tremendous pressure to do so. And if it doesn't, I am suggesting that one of those members of Congress that you just ran on the screen should take this to the floor of the House of Representatives and release it there, because the Constitution protects anything that is said there. As Senator Feinstein did this with torture memos, these members of Congress should do it with this, because the rest of Congress and the American public is entitled to know. We put the Constitution in the hands of people to protect it, and they've abused that power. We need to know who the abusers were and what they did.
All right, so here you have it. As
I'm sorry, I had to just jump in there and say,
not a problem.
Oh my.
So as they have everyone chasing their tails and having the perception that this has to be voted on, that is actually not the case.
Disinformation.
This information can be read right on the floor of Congress. There is nothing anybody can do about it. Trey Gowdy admitted he is the one who put this memo together by information that was given to him by the FBI. Okay? So, let's get that narrative out of your mind. Stop letting them deflect you from the real issues. Now, previously, there was also a FISA document that was released. It was 99 pages. It is not the 4-page memo. Let me be clear about that. A lot of people are putting out there, fake news is putting out there, that, oh, that's the memo. No, it's not.
that came from InfoWars.
Right. Well, it is not the memo. It is a previous memo. But in that memo, the Section 702 data on U.S. person identifiers, it says it may be conducted if they're first approved in accordance with internal NSA procedures, which, of course, must require a statement of facts establishing that the use of any such identifier as a selection term is reasonably likely to return foreign intelligence information, unquote.
Release it on the floor.
I don't think so.
You know what,
Let
Lori?
Let me tell you why. This is not the four page.
I understand that, but let's start a new hashtag I want to get into people's heads.
Read it on the floor.
Release the memo on House floor. I'm going to start with that.
Read it on the floor. Just read it on the floor. So the reason that this is extremely important, because as you know, it's supposedly for foreign targets, but they're using it on U.S. persons, all right, without warrants, which is, of course, unlawful and illegal. There is no probable cause. They're looking for probable cause out of this. The reason I'm telling you all of this is because it goes back to that mastering the human domain. Let me tell you what the human domain is. The human domain is the totality of the physical, cultural, and social environments that influence human behavior to the extent that success of any military operation or campaign depends on the application of unique capabilities that are designed to fight and win population-centric conflicts. It is a critical and complementary concept to the recognized domains of land, air, maritime, space, and cyberspace. This concept and the addition of a human domain are important because the other domains insufficiently address the human dimension of conflict. Although it is deemed a critical component to land power, further, the addition of a human domain similar to the seventh warfighting function will ensure that, quote, we are providing a framework to support and employ the complementary capabilities of special operations and conventional forces, unquote. Why is that so important? Let me tell you. Lieutenant General Keith Walker noted, quote, the rising velocity of human interaction through the internet and social media makes influencing human behavior the centerpiece of military strategy, unquote. It is also stated, yes.
In Avatar, they called it winning the hearts and minds by any means possible.
Well, it's going to get a lot more nasty with what I'm getting ready to go back over. So that information is contained in the USAWC Civilian Research Project, which, of course, you will have links to. So why am I telling you this with the Ammon Bundy situation of what he was talking about? First Amendment zones, the disinformation campaigns that went out to try to make the whole of the American people believe that they were the bad guys, that they held guns and scared these federal agents, when in reality, they had a military force there at the Bundy Ranch. They had snipers. They had MRAPs. They had all of these things, but they were manipulating through communications, media, non-government organizations, propaganda, lies, and deceit. They were controlling the narrative. That is also known as mastering the human domain. And it is considered the seventh warfighting function. So, I think what I am going to do is let you know that Department of Defense on December 13, 2017 addressed U.S. commanders must embrace cyber, special ops chief says. This is what was said. Cyber capabilities are integral to everything the U.S. Special Operations Command does worldwide. The commander said at the Association of the U.S. Army's Hot Topic discussion here today. Army General Raymond A. Thomas III noted that his command embraced the cyber world early, which has driven many of the successes the command has achieved. While the command obviously defends its cyber community, Thomas spoke about offensive and exploitive cyber operations across the cyber continuum during his address. Operations in the cyber realm are as new as the domain itself, the general said. Quote, we special operations forces live, some would say thrive, in a world that is often out ahead of policy, unquote. Many of SOCOM's approaches since 9/11 were previously undefined in the policy realm. Quote, arguably the same can be said of cyber capability, unquote. The idea of cyber as a warfighting domain is so new that many commanders consign it to a chief information officer, he said. This is inconsistent with how we address every other domain, the general said. Quote, commanders don't outsource or pay so little attention to those, unquote. So what I am going to do before I finish covering this, I'm going to let you hear what he had to say, but I want you to pay attention to the trigger words. I want you to pay attention to the different things that I read to you, what the mastering the human domain is. I wanted you to pick up on the special operations and the centric operations and the unconventional warfare and realize that and this is a quote, Special Operations Forces contend that they are already have a foothold in the human domain and are ideally suited to operate in the domain because, quote, special operations are special because their success depends on long-term relationship with indigenous forces and populations and knowledge of the cultural, societal, economical, and political environments in which they occur. Now, I'm going to tie this together with unconventional warfare as well. By special operations. Does this mean our military is behind it? No, it does not. But make no mistake, the individuals who are behind this memo, if they are the same individuals that are named in that 99-page document, they are tied directly to having this type of information, working hand in hand with individuals who use this type of warfighting function. Not only that, go ahead.
Well, to me, I get a different message from what you're saying, and the undertones, the sleight of hand utilization of certain trigger or red flag words. Whenever they talk about any means of possible, they talk about using offensive and exploitative. That's the same thing that Site Intel, Rita Katz's Soros-funded cyber terrorism organization, is using against the people to implant
psychological operations,
discriminating intel into the computers, false discriminating perversion evidence of child pedophilia or other sexual deviancy in somebody's computer to frame the blame on the intended victim to dissuade and to dilute their effectiveness as a mouthpiece for truth, liberty, and freedom. And this is what we're seeing.
And it leads to that. Mastering the human domain is about psychological operations. And I have a great list that military documents provided for me, which are not classified. They are available. I wouldn't share anything, obviously, classified. I want you to definitely...
You may not have on your list. Psycho-political warfare by Kenneth Goff, reduced to a pamphlet called Brainwashing by Labyrinthi, Labyrinthi, Beria, Beria, former head of the Soviet KGB, who spoke prolifically here in America about their PSYOPs mind control, which is, if we go back to Edwin Bernays and Gordon R. Wasson and Hegel and the Theosophical Institute and their works at the Tavistock Institute, where they came up with the concept of psychopolitical warfare and really called it public relations because people had become so hated against propaganda, mind control, if you will, of having their minds seduced and induced with false beliefs, deceived to believe in a ruse to confuse that something that wasn't true was.
In their own documentation, they admit this, and that's why we use it, because it's their documentation and it shows it. So I want you to hear what, right, but we have to expose them with their own own information. What are they going to do, say they didn't put it out? It's an army manual. So what I'm going to share with you right now, please pay attention to trigger words. Army General Raymond A. Thomas III, and what he had to say to the Association of the U.S. Army in Arlington, Virginia on December 13th, 2017, a little bit over a month ago, when they were discussing cyber operations. If you would, Mike, please play that clip.
Paul, thanks very much for that introduction, and thanks, as importantly, for what you and your great team at R-Cyber are accomplishing every day. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to apologize right up front that my speech might be a little slurred, because like many of you in the audience, I'm still recovering from the intoxicating experience of Army's victory over Navy this past weekend. In fact, I can't remember the last time we lost to those rascals, but good weekend. I just finished consuming a very good read about our digital future entitled Machine Platform Crowd. I commend it to you as the format drives us all to ask some really profound questions about our organizations, and I think it's applicable to both commercial and military organizations. Anyway, one of the humorous insights is about the HIPPO phenomenon. HIPPO, standing for the highest paid person's opinion. It really is a jab at the norm that often we have the most senior or highest paid person opining or making decisions on matters where they are the least technically qualified. So I'm here today acknowledging the fact that I may be the embodiment of that guy as your keynote speaker on cyber. Anyway, we can all probably remember our formative personal experiences in cyber. I was the Harvard graphics expert on the Ranger Regimental staff. Remember Harvard graphics? However, my real introduction to this domain and its associated complexities actually occurred about 8 years ago while serving as a Brigadier General on the Joint Staff in 2009. During my tenure there, we dealt with the seminal publication of Inspire magazine. You know, the slick English language production which advocated build a bomb in the kitchen of your mom. I attended countless deputies committee sessions and even a few PCs on that subject, which focused on the nuanced threat, an adversarial influence operation in the cyber domain, and I was an eyewitness to the extraordinary difficulty it presented to our policymakers and security experts based upon concerns ranging from U.S. Internet service provider equities, foreign sovereign issues, all the way to First Amendment rights. It was a provocative experience to highlight our lack of preparedness for this new environment. 8 years and over a dozen editions of Inspire and subsequently Dabiq and Ramia, I hope that we've made progress in both our approach and our capabilities. And I think we have made significant strides in both capability and process, but we need to be so much better. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to share my thoughts with you as the keynote address for this conference. Besides my acknowledged HIPPO shortcomings, some of you may be wondering why we have a special operator here today to discuss cyber operations. Frankly, I feel that we have grown up together. In fact, we have been very closely tied over the past several years with a fascinating symbiotic development. Several years ago, in a different capacity, Mike Rogers encouraged me to integrate cyber into everything we were endeavoring to do in our Special Operations Force operations in the interest of driving the policy discussions. I think we've enjoyed a very effective partnership. In fact, I feel comfortable in stating that cyber operations are integral to everything we do at U.S. Special Operations Command, defending always, but also pursuing offensive and exploitive cyber operations across the operating continuum. Much like the applicable science, this has been, and continues to be an area of nuanced authority and policy, much like most of our counterterrorist activities. Again, some natural similarities. We Special Operations Forces live, some would say thrive, in a world which is often out ahead of policy. Policy by CONOP has pejorative connotations, but actually acknowledges the fact that many of our approaches over the past decade and a half of continuous combat were previously undefined in the pre-existing policy realm. Arguably, the same can be said about cyber capability and TTP development. Cyber missions are defined with a paradigm of defend, attack, and exploit. By choice today, I'll spend very little time on the first mission, defend, which is not to imply the absolute criticality of this mission and the fact that it is absolutely commander business. Unfortunately, I think it is trended to be considered a CIO or J6 problem, which is inconsistent with how we address every other domain. Commanders don't outsource or pay so little attention to those. While defending is paramount, arguably the greatest space for advancement is in the realm of attack and exploit. At the end of the day, it is still not cliche to state that in many instances it is easier, although not necessarily most effective, to conduct a kinetic strike on an individual or a target than to conduct an offensive cyber operation. I'll just get it out of the way up front. However, due to great work, much of it from the U.S. Cybercom, our cyber, and TF Ares teams, we've seen huge improvements. In areas of declared hostility with a standing execution order, the approval to execute timeline for offensive cyber operations has compressed significantly. This is a huge improvement. But, and I know those who work in cyberspace will agree with me, it is still far too slow. The limiting factor for cyber effectiveness continues to evolve around policy and process. Our leaders recognize this problem. In a recent address, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dunford, described the problem by saying, "One of the challenges of the United States is that we are a nation of laws, and our process to approve cyber operations is detailed and lengthy. Russia and China are not inhibited." I'm confident, however, that we are pushing for the necessary authorities and capabilities that will be effective and consistent with our American values and the applicable statutes such as the law of armed conflict. So let me provide a few thoughts or principles that I think apply to our approach to cyber operations. First, cyber is both a challenge and an opportunity. It will get harder and conversely present more opportunities as we evolve. Secondly, the cyber domain is global, as are our adversaries. It and they do not neatly confine themselves to a geographic area or the way we are structured to fight. Third, we can do this. We have the technology and know-how to dominate in this domain, but it requires a focused effort and repetitions matter. Fourth, we need to continue to aggressively build the team, get the right people, give them the tools. Our cyber, TF Ares, U.S. Cybercom, we are certainly moving in the right direction, but talent and task organization matter. Fifth, get policy in line with the requirement and the reality. We need to move at the speed of war for operational approval. Sixth, trust the team. Mission command applies. We must give our commanders the ability to employ cyber at the strategic, operational, and tactical levels. Tell them the desired end state or effect and allow them to get after it. Seventh, integrate effects. Kinetic activities, cyber activities, information operations, public affairs, diplomatic action. Effects are much more powerful when executed in a coordinated manner. What worked for traditional military operations applies here. Eighth, exploit success. We must campaign in cyber. Maintaining initiative and momentum is key. Successful operations need to be followed in rapid succession. Ninth, and critically, we must work with partners. We cannot succeed in a global domain without international and industry partners. And to have partners, we have to share information with them. Our current method of classification does not facilitate sharing. Our current default is not sharing enough. Let me expand on a few of these. To my first point, cyber is a challenge. We tend to focus on our vulnerabilities and our dependence on cyber in a self-constraining way. I would offer it's akin to the Pandora's box aversion. We need to mitigate our vulnerabilities while building dominating offensive capability. Capability in this domain must keep pace with our rapidly adapting joint force. Our adversaries are moving out aggressively and boldly. We need to keep pace. This Sputnik space race is in cyberspace. We all know the preceding analogies. The British had access to the same technology as the Germans when submarines changed the balance of naval power at the beginning of World War II. They just hadn't embraced the technology and were stuck in an old paradigm. The French, with a huge standing army, were caught off guard by German maneuver, rendering fixed defenses obsolete. Again, not a lack of technology. The French could have executed the same thing. They were just stuck in an old paradigm. Airplanes, machine guns, ships, there are countless examples. We have to embrace this technology as essential to our warfighting capability. We have the technology. We just have to embrace it as an essential weapon in our arsenal. Our adversaries are already adapting. We need to keep pace. The most successful military organizations adapt and integrate all domains and new technologies in their operations. We are experiencing an evolution in cyber operations akin to the evolution in counterterrorist operations post 9/11. Critical to both evolutions is educating key leaders in the military and civilian ranks, as well as establishing credibility of the forces conducting these important missions.
Okay, and with that, we'll be right back after a couple of words from our sponsors. Please hang with us and we'll continue hearing what he had to say.
This is the most transparent administration in history.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
homeowners. Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Radio broadcast on Reloaded on RBN. My name is Lori Anderson. I am your host for this evening. I am joined with Chris, and we will get back to what Army General Raymond A. Thomas III had to say about these cyber operations.
Our adversaries are already adapting. We need to keep pace. The most successful military organizations adapt and integrate all domains and new technologies in their operations. We are experiencing an evolution in cyber operations akin to the evolution in counterterrorist operations post 9/11. Critical to both evolutions is educating key leaders in the military and civilian ranks, as well as establishing credibility of the forces conducting these important missions. The second point. Cyber domain is global. The cyber domain is not confined to a geographic combatant command construct. Correspondingly, our geographically aligned command and control structure is not conducive to the most agile, effective, and global approach to the threat. Cheap cyber tools enable terrorist organizations to act like nation states, and small nation states can act like global powers. Our adversaries can move at the speed of electrons with impunity through their proxies and servers located across international boundaries. This allows them to command, control, recruit, spread propaganda, exploit political wedges, while we try to keep pace across bounded geographic domains and policy hurdles. We need to recognize and rectify this mismatch and reduce policy constraints. We are all familiar with examples of adversary state and non-state violent extremist organizations' use of cyber to support their objectives. Russia is noted for their cyber espionage. China has targeted the U.S. corporate sector in the past. and Iran has shown their capability for both destructive and cyber attacks, and their ability to empower unaffiliated regional violent extremist organizations to act as proxies in cyberspace. Messaging through cyberspace has proven to be critical for violent extremist organizations. Through the use of cyberspace, they have built a significant online presence and marketed a global brand. None of these activities take place in a single, easily defined geographic area. With a keystroke, our adversaries have global effects. We need to better leverage our global organizations like Cybercom and SOCOM to provide both global zone defense as well as the necessary parallel offensive capabilities. Consistent with our other military capabilities, we must strive to be the most capable and agile cyber power without arbitrary constraints that only we recognize and which limit our effectiveness. We have the technology. This is not a case where we don't know how to use this stuff. We are still the world leader in technology. We must do a better job getting this technology into the hands of our soldiers. The acquisition system that produced the M1 tank and Apache helicopter might be too slow for the adaptation required to compete with rapidly changing cyber technology. We need to enable our capability development in cyber with the most agile acquisition approach, certainly an objective of our current OSD leadership. Our acquisition authority and process at SOCOM enables mission success for SOF by letting us rapidly get capabilities into the hands of our operators and serves as a good example of how cyber technology development needs to be similarly enabled. Rapid development and fielding is a must in this indescribably dynamically changing domain. We have to continue to build the team. Get the right people, give them the tools, our cyber, TF Ares, U.S. Cybercom. One of our soft truths is that people are more important than hardware. Ironically, this domain tests that theory, as the balance of man-machine interface is the crux of the problem and the solution. But the criticality of getting the right people is still paramount. Army Cyber is doing just that, bringing the right players to our cyber, building cyber as a branch, figuring out new ways to bring the right talent into the fight. Like SOF, the cyber force needs to be lean, quick to respond, and flexible, with a flat administrative structure, with top-tier skills and broad authorities to conduct effective cyber operations. I thought it was interesting at the Army-Navy game this past week to note the contrast in the two services' commercials. The Navy trotted out familiar and eye-catching advertisements about aircraft carrier and Top Gun-like activities, while the Army pushed out an advert on our cyber force. Almost didn't fit in a football stadium, but is clearly the focus and the priority on attracting that critical talent. In 2014, the Army created the cyber branch. The last time the Army created a new branch was 1987 with Special Forces. The Army's investment in this branch speaks volumes. There are young officers, NCOs, and soldiers that wear a distinctive insignia and have the institutional weight of a schoolhouse and career management supporting their work. Our cyber has also established a pilot program to directly commission cyber experts. This is the type of innovative model we must use to get the right cyber experts into our force. And it recognizes that the right people, the right team members, will not always come out of traditional recruiting and commissioning programs. We did this in World War II with the OSS, our SOCOM predecessor, and now our cyber is doing it again. It is somewhat heretical, but we need to resist our institutional tendency to disincentivize these experts by imposing the same requirements we have for our maneuver forces. The best person may not be a marathon runner or a CrossFit fanatic. We have to be okay with this, because the most effective manning of our cyber force will ensure that SOF and other maneuver forces conduct their missions more effectively with less loss of life and less collateral damage. We need to get policy in line with reality. Time is of the essence. Speed of decision-making and action must keep pace with the speed of war. Like I stated up front, it's easier to kill than to turn off a computer in many cases. We can do this, but our approvals are based on old paradigms. Cybercom, our cyber, and JTF Ares have made huge progress in this area through repetitions and some heavy lifting. But it's not time to pat ourselves on the back and say this is as fast as we can go. Operational and tactical level authorities are a policy area of focus where we can continue to enhance the effectiveness of the joint force. There are acknowledged strategic levels of approval which apply, but they should be the exception and withheld at the appropriate level of authority. It really boils down to my next point, which is trust. We need to trust the team. Mission command applies. Cyber operations will be most effective with intent-based orders and disciplined, empowered initiative. We need to provide commanders and units the capabilities and the authorities to employ them while orchestrating effects at the strategic, operational, and tactical levels. Commanders we trust to execute campaigns against our enemies can be trusted to properly employ cyber tools. They will be enabled by the cyber experts that Army Cyber is building, strategic, operational, and tactical. Our leaders will responsibly employ cyber tools advised by their cyber experts. And when empowered, our commanders will integrate these tools into our already impressive warfighting capabilities. But we have to arm commanders at all levels with an understanding and experience of the cyber electromagnetic domain. Mastery of this domain is commander business. Repetitions in training and in combat matter, and trust will only be given when our commanders truly understand cyber and are able to incorporate it into operations and not just use it as a post-mission addendum, which brings me to my next point, integrated effects. Kinetic activities, cyber activities, information operations, public affairs, diplomatic action, again, these are all powerful tools individually, but much more powerful and effective when executed in a coordinated manner. Synchronizing effects in time and space is critical. It's the new air-land battle, real and virtual influence battle. Combine arms, cyber, information or influence operations, and fires. Cyber operators can't operate in a silo. They must straddle intelligence and operational activities. They need to be comfortable as the embodiment of ops intel fusion. Cyber is a domain with an associated continuum of activities, small and large, surgical to mast, We need to be able to echelon fires in this domain. Task organization matters. Recently, SOF, Cybercom, TF Ares, the IA and international partners conducted an operation which provided devastating effects on the adversary by combining offensive cyber operations, information operations to fill the void, financial disruption efforts, and culminating in kinetic destruction of that adversary on an epic scale. I would offer that we can only achieve exquisite effects like this with the appropriately capable joint or combined task force structure, organizations which can synchronize all of these capabilities. We should be conducting operations like this continuously in a campaign. We are not there yet, but we're trending positively in that direction more every day, and this is not something which is exclusive to a declared theater of activity. You could substitute arrest as the finish in lieu of kinetic in domestic law enforcement scenarios around the world. We, our Army leaders, past and present, made combined arms a reality. While different, cyber operations are traditional military operations done on non-traditional terrain. Because of this, all the components of effective cyber or Army operations are still important. Intelligence, planning, adaptability, all built upon a strong foundation of leadership are what will ensure our success in the future. The Army, our joint force, will take cyber tools, technology, influence tools, and synchronize them with our lethal combat capabilities. Our joint and combined force will be a virtual, real juggernaut. We've seen glimpses of this already in our current operations, but we can't afford cyber operations to languish as one-off, niche activities. We have to exploit like we would a fleeing enemy on ground, which brings me to my last point, exploitation. Whether through virtual or kinetic means, must be our mindset. We practice it at NTC and JRTC. We do it in ground combat. We must do it in cyber combat. But as we are relearning in our current efforts, effective exploitation is resource intensive. We have to resource and man to the task, which brings me to my final point, the necessity of working with partners. We cannot succeed in a global domain without international and industry partners. We've seen the goodness of sharing with partners in the counter-violent extremist operations fight. We are sharing better and more effectively than ever. However, our default setting for years was not sharing. We need to continue to crush through that bias and endeavor to share with willing and very capable partners. Sharing is also key to increasing our opportunities to innovate. Innovation is critical to the future success in cyber. Industry is leading much of the innovation. We must work to incorporate this progress. They are applying extraordinary resources in the billions of dollars in research and development. And the technology is changing so rapidly that it compels the most enhanced lash up with industry. The same ubiquitous technology, cheap and easy to employ, the technology that lowered the bar for our adversaries, can also be employed by our friends and allies to to have an outside contribution in the cyber domain. Many of these partners have different, and in some cases, better authorities than we do to operate in the domain. We should look to leverage that advantage. It almost goes without saying that it is also vitally important to develop and maintain partnerships across DOD, the intelligence community, and the interagency to make this work. Again, this is the nature of our existence in the Special Operations Force every day. Our ops are only as successful as the partnerships we enjoy with our intelligence agencies and IA partners. I believe the same does and will apply for cyber. Finally, this domain, arguably the universal domain, which transcends all others, is the prospective launchpad for what may be the most extraordinary revolution in security operations for the future in the form of machine learning and artificial intelligence. We are on the cusp of that major transformative change. However, we won't transition to this critical capability if we don't achieve greater agility in the basics, the blocking and tackling of our current cyber environment. Our adversaries have already stated their intent and taken the preliminary steps to dominate in this new form of information competition. We have to keep pace. Again, I'd like to thank the folks represented here today from CyberCom, R-Cyber, TF Ares, and the related communities who are forging our new capabilities and authorities every day. You are making a critical difference in the current and future fight. SOCOM looks forward to partnering with you as we continue to enhance the nation's capabilities in this critical domain. Thanks again to Paul, AUSA, for allowing me to speak today and share some of my thoughts on the subject. I think I have time for a few questions.
All right. So we're going to end that right there. And tonight we don't have that much time to be able to continue going over this. So what I will do is I will continue covering this tomorrow. We will be talking about psychological operations in unconventional warfare, how it links to mastering the human domain, and we will also discuss the situations. Can you see how it connects with the FISA? They're having everybody chase an idea that this memo can't be released. This memo was created by Trey Gowdy in the first place. He could simply read it. Read it on the floor. But that's that distraction. Look over to the right and not notice what the left hand is doing.
So what here's I'm the going distraction. To do. Lori, you know, as I'm sitting back and looking at this, I'm seeing what the distraction has been from the beginning. Read the memo. That's not what it is, just like the judge said.
Mm-hmm.
Read the memo on House floor. Hashtag that. It's already starting to take off. I just tweeted it, Facebooked it. Read the memo on House floor. That way they can bypass all the restrictions. It's constitutionally sound. It can't be restricted. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly lawful.
It is. And they can't be held accountable in any form or fashion when they do that, according to House rules and constitutionality. But we do have a caller, so I'm going to go to the caller, and we're going to cover the rest of this tomorrow night, because the stuff that I have to connect the dot with you with will make you understand a greater, deeper understanding of what is really going on. You will see step by step the things that I cover tomorrow night. You will see step by step what is actually going on inside the United States of America and how they're not only deflecting, but how these tactics are being used in order to create the dissension and the division and the illusion of all of this that is trying to tear down the United States of America. Welcome
hey, one
to
question.
The show, Mike.
Yes. Hold on, one question first. I just want everybody to really critically think about this for a second. Dianne Feinstein and Peter Schiff issue a letter to Facebook and to mm-hmm. Twitter,
yep.
asking them to, you know, to silence the Russian bots with the Read the Memo. You and I both know what that did. That letter that they sent to Facebook and Twitter caused more of a stir than the momentum originally had. And mm-hmm. it's all on that hashtag to make you think that this is a restricted thing that has to go through a special process. I think, you know, I have to give my hats off to Judge Andrew Napolitano. He never disappoints. Anyway, with that, I'll let get to the caller.
Well, and also in response to what you just said, Tom, when I saw that, I'd started a hashtag, not a bot. And so hopefully everybody, when you're doing anything, not a bot. That's simple. So welcome.
I know my buddy Sal's going to have a problem with that because he's the bots. But anyway, go ahead.
Hi, bye-bye. Mike. How are you doing this evening?
Well, I just feel like a lot of this stuff the guy's talking about is he's letting stuff out that's 20 years out of date. If there was anything surprising in that memo, the only thing I could think of it would be something to say that, you know, we've lost control of an artificial intelligent entity and it's now autonomous.
Which is something we've already known. I want to know why, instead of release the memo, it's not lock them up. I've been hashtagging that, by the way, along with the release the memo. It's been beside and then I write hashtag lock them up. Because this has been going on. We've known it. I think maybe it's because it's on paper now. It's official for them. I don't know. We've all known this has been going on.
Snowden confirmed Russell Tice and other people's whistleblowing or attempts at whistleblowing, you know, and William Benny freely admits he can't know everything that was going on at NSA, mm-hmm. but he started working on the digital explosion in 1985, and they were slurping up and profiling people with from day one with the cell phones all the way back to the Miami Vice, if you've ever seen that show with Crockett and Tubbs. Early 80s.
I used to love they were that already, show.
They were already profiling people with voice prints and known associates, and just the content on the phone calls when they were live. But at some point in the early 90s, I think, they started actually getting content when the devices were off. And this is, you know, pre-internet. Yep. So when the internet came along, they were already flagged in place, I think. People that were on the bulletin boards and computer savvy people were being watched all along. Whenever they could catch somebody that was talented enough, they got them to work for them. The old scared straight sort of situation. He's talking about what I hear this guy talking about basically is he's giving over authority to corporations, be it Facebook, Intel, the Israelis. Basically, which I think pretty much Intel is Israel now. That's one thing that I didn't hear him talk about is, you know, being able to identify those that are supposedly our enemies or supposedly our friends. That you know, I hear Iran, and he's doing lots of sports analogies, which I find pretty juvenile, but given the audience he's talking to, that he's trying to, I guess, speak to that audience. But I don't think he's knows a whole lot. He doesn't know everything he's talking about. At least William Benny would admit that. You know, he's like, you know, as long as he worked in there, he knows he couldn't possibly know everything that's going on. And I think that's why he's ran across this targeted. He's in this involved. If you've seen it, the targeted individuals situation where he's trying to get people that have evidence and experience with being a targeted individual on this level of warfare to individually manipulate and experiment on people. Just like with Facebook, until they published something in academia, all we had was suspicion that they were experimenting on us. But now we know, because they wanted to publish something, that, yes, they've been experimenting on it on their users to manipulate them, manipulate their mood, manipulate their response. And so in the near future, there is not going to be any input or output of any human resource dominating the human realm or whatever they're going to call it. They want to track every influence going into and out of every individual. And that's why there's not hardly any one-way media, one-way broadcasting, and they're trying to eliminate live media.
Oh, yeah. They definitely want to eliminate live because that's what destroyed their narrative in the first place when it came to the Bundy situation and when it came to Malheur. That is what destroyed fake news. That's what destroyed J.J. McNabb and her congressional testimony, which I really hope she is sued for, and I hope charges are pressed against them for perjury. Also, the individual who was from the SPLC that I cannot remember the name right off the top of my head, that was also over there testifying under oath. And here's the thing. This goes back into what we are discussing tonight, mastering the human domain. It is right to completely control the thought patterns. There were, because of quote-unquote information received from SPLC and other quote-unquote news agencies, by the way, and, of course, corrupt individuals within the FBI, which everyone's known they were corrupt, but now we have proof on paper that they're corrupt. They had a basically labeled the Bundys and the Bundy supporters as domestic terrorists in an official Department of Homeland Security document. And that's not okay. But that is controlling the narrative. It is the PSYOP. It is.
Well, there's
using,
no border. That's one thing he said in his speech there several times.
Right.
There are
right
no borders. There are no
right
borders. This is global. There is no jurisdictional boundaries anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the military,
well,
it,
right,
you remember a few years ago the U.S. Navy had an ad campaign that they pulled off the air after about a year. You can still find it on the air. The U.S. Navy, a global force for good.
Yeah, I know.
As if
that
from now on.
Yeah.
From now on. And I think the Army has jumped on that bandwagon. So,
well,
so much for
a
the
lot
concept
of them. For a lot of years they've been taking orders from the United Nations, not actually from U.S. Congress. I mean, I don't know if you remember this, but Jeff Sessions, when he was in Congress, and I believe it was, oh my Lord, what was that name, Tom? Who was it that was in front of him? Chris, help me here. I'm trying to remember the name of that gentleman. He told Jeff Sessions that he wasn't seeking permission from Congress, that he was seeking permission from the United Nations and then would let Congress know. And I cannot remember the name of that gentleman for the life of me right this second, but I remember it very well. I'll find that and I'll play it tomorrow night if you would like.
Yeah, I remember the controversy over that.
Right. But the thing is, you know, in these military documents, it does UNCON U.S. and then CON U.S. And if you don't, and individuals who are listening to the sound of my voice, if you don't know what that is, that's outside continental United States and that's continental United States. If it's listed as continental United States, that means inside our landmass, inside our borders. And with everything that is connecting, we need to be able to peg this propaganda, whether it be on YouTube, whether it be on fake news, whether it be through propaganda, misinformation. There is an information warfare going on, everyone, and we're trying to expose the truth so that you have the ability to figure it out. And as always, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Join us tomorrow night. We are going to continue this discussion tomorrow night. Thank you, Chris, for joining me, and Mike, as well as you, Tom. Love all of you. As always, watch your backs, check your facts. Semper Fi, Ellis, and have a wonderful night.
I'm not interested in